Okay. Appeal 12-1522. United States versus Nunez Guzman. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's Mr. Pixton.
Yes.
Nice to have you.
May it please the Court, Your Honors. My name is Alan Pixton. I'm with Kirkland & Ellis, and I represent Appellant Burnaby Nunez Guzman, counsel. And I apologize, Your Honors, for the amount of paper I brought up with me, but I, too, am a little bit of a Luddite, so I...
That's fine.
Fair enough.
You've come to the right place.
I'd like to talk about why the photo display that was used with Mr. Sandoval's identification was problematic, also why the ID was not reliable, and finally why this is not harmless error. But I'd first like to start by stating that in a case where there's such a tenuous connection between a first-time offender and the nonviolent crime of growing marijuana, such as here, is called into question by allegations of a police-tainted identification, the failure of the trial court judge in his role as the gatekeeper of evidence to use all information available, including representations made by the prosecution which directly contradict the identification in question, creates a very substantial likelihood of irreparable misidentification.
I'd like to ask you what it was about the photographic display that was really unduly suggested. I mean, given that the agent evidently placed many photographs on the table and asked Sandoval to identify anyone that he knew, bottom line, do you think it was that it was a license that was folded? I mean, what's the absolute problem?
I think it's a combination, Your Honor, of the three issues. One, that you have all large color mug shots except for the one folded up identification card, which in and of itself is not a problem. You also have the DEA agent providing the only description of this Green Bay character's involvement in the conspiracy. You do have, for example, Mr. Sandoval stating that he was given a ride from the airport to a house, but that is the only thing that he states that he knows about Green Bay. It's the DEA agent himself who provides the identification or the role of Green Bay in the conspiracy. And finally, what's most troubling, I think, is what's pointed out by the district court judge, that upon viewing the video of this identification, he said that the depiction in the video is, here is Green Bay before Sandoval even had a chance to see the photograph. So it's those three elements combined together that suggest that there is some police taint there of suggestiveness that perhaps any of those individual points by themselves may not reach that level of unduly suggestive.
He added that he was 100% certain.
Yes, Your Honor, he did. However, the district court judge had been told just 2 months before he read that transcript that he had seen him four times, once for an extended period of time, that he played a large role in the operation, whereas what the district court judge was shown during the evidentiary hearing was what Mr. Sandoval ultimately testified at trial, which is that he saw him once for a 25-minute ride before he knew that Green Bay had any involvement in the conspiracy at all.
What about the point that the agent himself didn't know who Mr. Nunez Guzman was? Doesn't that lessen the possibility of undue suggestiveness?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because I think, as the court pointed out itself, himself, the interview kind of changes when it gets to that point. Yes, he does say in the evidentiary hearing that he just didn't know who any of these people were, and he just was showing one photo after another. But I think that's undermined a little bit by the trial court judge finding, or at least stating on the record during the evidentiary hearing, that the tone of the interview that the interview changes and goes from him showing pictures to saying, okay, I have a lot of photos here. I'm going to show you another one. You tell me if you know who this is. And then he says, here's Green Bay. And the depiction in the video, according to the trial court judge, is that he says, this is Green Bay. And then the officer pulls out the photograph, the folded-up state ID card of Mr. Nunes Guzman.
I thought the evidence, the tape was ambiguous on that. Because they've got their backs turned.
Obscure.
Nobody can see it.
Well, Your Honor, the way the video is shot is that the camera is over the shoulder of the agent, and the camera is focused mostly on, you can see the agent, but you see the witness, Mr. Sandoval, mostly. But the trial court judge said that his viewing of it was that he made the identification before he saw the photograph.
Is that what the trial court found?
Well, that's what he said during the evidentiary hearing.
I'm sorry, Diane. I have that right because I had going along the same line. I thought the district court viewed the tape and remarked that it seemed as though Sandoval curiously said, here is Green Bay, before the DA agent even revealed the photo to him. So the court made that remark but then went on to say, even if there was some problem with it, the 20-minute car ride was sufficient basis for the identification.
That's correct, Your Honor. That gets into the totality of the circumstances analysis. And
how would we then, under that circumstance, get past harmless error? Even if there was some amount of suggestiveness in the photographic identification, both Sandoval and Navarro had spent a non-trivial amount of time with Nunes Guzman when he gave them rides. And here you have both of them identifying him, at trial. How would we get past harmless error?
Well, I think, for one thing, the harmless error analysis turns on whether a reasonable jury could have acquitted him. And in this case, the jury did acquit him of 5 of the 8 counts. I think if Sandoval's unreliable identification was excluded, then the only person who would have testified that he had seen that Mr. Nunes Guzman had knowledge of this conspiracy would be Navarro, and there's considerable issues, I think, with his testimony that was shown during his cross-examination.
Well, this is not an ID case in the classic sense. The IDs were one piece of evidence. He's also the owner of the drug house. There's is it 650 phone calls, something like that?
Yes, Your Honor.
So this is not a stranger ID case where the ID is the whole case. The harmless error analysis really is pretty prominent here to the extent that there was suggestiveness at all.
And I would just respond to that, Your Honor, that taking away Sandoval's unreliable identification leaves you with Navarro. And yes, there is quite a bit of
plus the 650 phone calls, plus the fact that he owns the drug house.
Yes, each of those facts, I think, being just as likely that as Mr. Nunes Guzman held it at during the trial, that he was an unwitting participant in the sense that he rented the house to Mr. Raul Avila, but he did not participate in the conspiracy, was not aware of it, and that the phone calls, the only evidence as far as the content of the phone calls that was introduced at trial was the testimony of Mr. Nunes Guzman, and that none of those phone calls had anything to do with conspiracy, but rather spoke about purchasing the house, purchasing cars, issues with the cars, and trying to proselyte and convert him to Christianity.
650 or 670 phone calls over 6 months.
Yes, Your Honor.
Rental concerns.
Yes, Your Honor. And
car deals.
And car deals and the possibility of purchasing the house and proselyting and sharing Bible scriptures with him is what Mr. Newsky-Spahn testified at trial.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Lipscomb.
Good morning, Judge. May it please the Court, I am Bill Lipscomb from the U.S. Attorney's Office in Milwaukee. I did try this case, so I'm familiar with the facts, though I was not the AUSA at the identification hearing. But Judge Sykes is right, this is not a stranger ID case. It's not like a bank robbery where the person is under a lot of stress and looks at the person for a very short period of time. This is a case where the individual, Mr. Sandoval here, was able to be with Mr. Nunez-Guzman for an extended period of time, able to get a great look at him, not under stress, and 100% certain that this was the guy he was with. Also, I think as Judge Robner was pointing out, this is nothing like a suggestiveness case that, at least in the cases I reviewed, has been before the court. There really isn't anything suggestive here. There are questions about exactly what happened because some of the showing of the photographs is obscured by the bodies that are there. But it's not a photo lineup case where there's suggestiveness.
And they're not even looking to secure an ID of a single individual. There's multiple people involved here, and they gave him this stack of photos, or the DEA agent gave him this stack of photos and said, do you recognize anybody in here?
Right. You've got to think about sort of where this fit in the investigation at that point. They've just taken the case down. They get one guy to come in and say, all right, I'll tell you what I know. They get the mug shots of the guys they just arrested the prior day. They know a little bit about Nunez-Guzman because they've seen his car there. His truck that's full of marijuana that's on the scene is registered to him. And the house itself is owned by him. So they get his driver's license photo, put it amongst these photos. Who do you know? Is really it.
So the fact that the photo looked a little different than the others in the sense that it wasn't a mugshot might matter if they were focusing on getting an ID of a specific, discreet individual.
Right, because then that photograph would stand out, but that's not it. Right. And as the agent testified, he didn't know who Green Bay was. He didn't know who Nunez-Guzman was. He'd been given some photographs by other agents. Asked him if he knows anything about these folks. So finally, as the court pointed out, it's an easy or harmless error case. There are all these phone calls. The defendant owns the residence. The defendant owns the truck. The defendant pays for the repairs for the truck that's used by the conspiracy. He gets a loaner truck when the truck that they need is broken down. He has, I think, in five of the phones that are there, including Mr. Navarro's phone, Green Bay, is listed in the contacts, and they'd been told to call this guy if they had problems, and that phone number defendant admitted was his. And we have all this testimony from Mr. Navarro as well, corroborating what Mr. Sandoval says, that Green Bay was involved, that he drove us up to the Groves. And on August 5th, importantly, probably very important for the jury as well, law enforcement observed Mr. Nunez-Guzman drive the group up to the Marinette Grove. And so it was easy for the jury and I think easy for this court to find that there is overwhelming evidence of guilt.
And these in this 600 case. Phone calls, did you present any testimony concerning what it was? Counsel says it had to do with car repairs and buying the house and converting somebody. Did you have any testimony about that?
No. Okay. No. I mean, there was no wiretap in the case. We just had looked to see how many calls went back and forth.
Do you think there's any problem whatsoever with the district court's analysis of the identification in the sense that Judge Griesbach didn't go through each of the bigger factors?
I don't think so, Judge. I mean, I think Biggers is really a totality of circumstance case. I mean, you've got to look at everything, and these are sort of the guideposts to look at I think the case law is if, you know, one factor isn't fully present or isn't there and the others are very significant, the judge is entitled to rely upon those. Here the key were the opportunity to observe the time that he had with him, as well as then the 100% certainty that this was the guy. And then, of course, you know, the reliability buttressed by all the other evidence in the case. So we'd ask the court to affirm the conviction below.
Do you have an instinct on the inconsistent verdict? Well, that's a
I do. I mean, I think
split verdict. Let's put it that way.
You know, it's conjecture. I mean, I think the jury verdict is not illogical in some sense because there were three different grows in northeastern Wisconsin. One of them in Menominee Indian Reservation, one in O'Connell County in the Nicolet National Forest, and one in Marinette. All very rural. All of the marijuana was being sort of like drained down from those grows into the Seymour house the defendant owned. We had evidence, direct evidence from law enforcement and Mr. Navarro of the defendant driving up to the Marinette grow, but never actually going to the other two grows. And so the jury might have said, okay, he never went to those grows, so maybe he doesn't know they exist, so we're not going to find him guilty of that. We're going to find him guilty of the overall conspiracy. But, you know, that could be the logic of it. I think it's otherwise a compromised verdict among jurors, and we never know what they do. Thank you.
Your time expired, but come on up for another 2 minutes. You don't have to.
Just two quick points, Your Honors. Number one, I think it's important to note, as counsel mentions, you know, it's conjecture to speculate as to why the jury acquitted five of the eight counts, but I do think it's important to point out that they did acquit on five of those eight counts, and that absent the problematic ID of Mr. Sandoval, it's possible that the jury might have acquitted him of the remaining counts. As I mentioned, I think that the evidence presented by Mr. Nunez Guzman was sufficient for them to believe that these other facts, that his version of the other facts was true. The second point, just briefly about sentencing, as I mentioned at the outset of my argument, I believe that as it says in the Second Circuit case, U.S. v. Vaughn, which adopts Wall Tower, that the judge should have taken into account the multiple acquittals in coming up with a sentence that was long enough but no longer than necessary to meet the 3553A sentencing factors. And in light of the many letters that the judge received, as well as the fact of deportation that my client will be facing, the statutory minimum of 10 years should have been the correct sentence.
This was a substantially below guideline sentence, just above the statutory minimum.
Only if you accept the count as put together in the PSR. If you accept my client's guideline calculation, this would actually be above the maximum.
Well, thanks to one and all, but of course, particular thanks go to Mr. Paxton and the law firm of Kirkland & Ellis. Thank you so much for taking on this task, and more than that, for doing such a fine job for your client. So we're very appreciative. We really are. We're always appreciative to you, so. Case is taken under advisement.